The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
We the blog.
On thetarlhurstend.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast Extra in association with the Reading Post for Friday, April 4th. My name's Dan Wimbush and I'm the editor of thetarlhurstend.com, an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm joined, as always, by the Reading Post's Reading reporter, Charles Watts. Charles, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. Bit of traffic, so this podcast is coming out a little bit later than we'd have liked, but what are you going to do? At least it's Friday.
Indeed, at least it is.
And we're coming to a podcast last week. I don't think we could have been any lower after the Barnsley performance. At least this week, Reading haven't lost. They didn't win, but they've got a 1-1 draw with Huddersfield at home.
Yeah, I think that's all you can really say about it, to be honest, wasn't it? Again, it wasn't a very good performance. Typical sort of, I don't know, it's like the same old story at AC Stadium at the moment, isn't it? Go there all full of hope that this could be the day that things turn around, and within a few minutes, horrible error and a stupid goal to concede. But you know, fair play to Reading, they came back, got themselves level, and I thought Huddersfield were the better side, to be fair, for the rest of the game. And Reading were quite fortunate to sneak a draw. I think the best thing about the game was the performance of Alex McCarthy. You know, he's coming for a little bit of criticism. We've spoken about it on here, haven't we?
Yep.
Some people are possibly saying, is it time for Feds to get a little bit of a run? But I think Alex certainly sort of silenced his doubts a little bit. He was back to his best, wasn't he? Made some fantastic saves. One from, I think it was Clayton in the first half, that was just heading for the top corner. From where I was sitting, it was one of those ones he just thought there was no way you're stopping that. And he somehow got down to it and flicked it over. So I think that's a big positive to come out of the game. That Alex looks like he's back to his best, and you know, Reading are going to need him at his very best for the remaining seven games of the season.
Absolutely. And we saw a full debut as well for Michael Hector, not in a position we're overly familiar with. I know he's played out on loan in the midfield, but starting in the middle for Reading over the more favoured Hoback pan, were you slightly surprised to see Nigel Adkins make that move?
I was very surprised, yeah. I saw the lineup and I was thinking, basically until kickoff, I was beginning to sort of sway the idea of him playing three centre-backs and wing-backs and everything. I just, the more you thought about it, we're like, is he really going to play Michael Hector there? I mean, what does it say to Hope Appen? What does it say to Jake Taylor, I suppose, as well? He's been in and around the season, that suddenly a centre-back's playing the centre midfield. But to be fair to Hector, I mean, I thought he was nervy the first 20 minutes. I thought the game kind of passed him by a little bit. He was rushing around trying to get himself as much involved as possible, and in a way, he was leaving him out. He was getting caught out of position a little bit. He'd be go chasing the ball. Suddenly, the ball would be turned over and Huddersfield would be away. And you know, there was no sort of central midfield cover. But to be fair to him, he grew into the game, I thought, as it went on. And he settled down and played pretty well. I mean, he could have scored as well. He had a good chance there. The keeper saved. I spoke to him after the game. He was surprised. He didn't know until the morning of the game that he was playing there. So it's not like they'd worked on it massively during training or anything like that. In the week building up to it. So, you know, Nigel certainly just flung him in there. To be fair to him, he said, you know, I played at Celtic Park in that position this season for Aberdeen. It doesn't get much tougher than that. And so he has done it before. But no, big call by Nigel. Not one that I'm expecting to see repeated this weekend, I have to say.
I mean, Danny Guthrie is returning from suspension and a few other options injury-wise that we'll come on to a little bit later. But the only other major talking point, I suppose, from the pre-game selection was the return of vice-captain Sean Morrison. Came straight in at centre-back, and it's safe to say he was a little bit rusty. Do you think he was fully fit?
No, I don't think he was. I think he was rushed back. I think Nigel kind of, I was speaking to him at the training ground yesterday, and he kind of hinted at that as well. They watched it back, watched the video back, and I think they were quite sure that maybe he was a little bit early, but they wanted to get him involved. Obviously, it's going to do him the world of good, getting 90 minutes under his belt like that, so he's going to get stronger and stronger as these last sort of 6-7 games go on. But it was very, very rusty. I mean, he had the worst possible start, didn't he, after 5 months out? The last thing you need is to completely misjudge a simple long ball.
There's something in the atmosphere of the Manessi Stadium, because it's not the first time that a defender or a midfielder has just completely missed a looping ball.
No, and that wasn't the only time he did it in the game as well, Morrison, to be fair. He got completely caught out, and Naki Wells punished him, and Naki Wells caused him a host of problems throughout the game. He gave him a bit of a torrid time, really. Morrison was shattered afterwards, but he was the last person out. We waited down to speak to him in the mix zone, and he was the last Reading player out. I think he was just sort of dragging his feet through the changing rooms. He was absolutely exhausted, he said. And to be fair, Naki Wells, I think, is the best forward I've seen at the Mad Stad this season. I was really impressed with, obviously, Ings and Vokes up at Burnley. But at Reading, Adam Medeski, I thought he's the best striker I've seen. I thought he's fantastic.
Yeah, you can see you can see why Reading were interested in him in January.
I know. I said I spoke to Nigel about him yesterday, saying the exact thing. He said, you know, yeah, we've been looking at him for years, but obviously just didn't have the tools available in January when he was for sale to go and get him. And it is a real shame when you watch him like that. He's a top striker. He's got so much about him. He's fast. He's quick. His movement's fantastic, and he works so hard as well. And he just seems like a decent bloke as well. I always spoke to him. Well, some other reporters spoke to him down when I was standing next to him, waiting for the Reading players, and he just came across. He's really got his head screwed on, and that's a real shame. I was just watching that thing. If only you were in blue and white.
Yeah, unfortunately, so it seems that the curse of ex-player scoring aces has now extended itself to former targets. It's soon going to get to the point where anybody that's driven past the Modesky Stadium is going to be nailed onto school. So, yeah, sort of a point, but I suppose the one real positive over the past couple of weeks has been the stuttering form of other sides. And me and Johnny talked on the main edition of the podcast earlier this week, and it's great that Reading are clinging on to the sixth place, but you just get this nagging feeling of if we'd only turned, what is it, 2 wins out of 11 at home? They've won just another couple of those, we'd be pretty much penciling those playoff dates in and looking to put the time off.
Well, you would definitely, and you'd still be thinking about automatic promotion as well. I mean, that's a crazy thing. You think, don't even go back that far. You just go back to after the Blackpool game, after the 5-1, was that January the 28th, I think it was. And there's been 6 games since then, 3 draws, 3 defeats, so 3 points from 18. At the start of that run, I think Reading were pretty much sixth. And yet they've picked up 3 points from 18 at home and are still sixth. I mean, that's mad. How is that? How can that be possible at this stage of the season? How can you not win 6 games and only pick up 3 points out of 18 at home and stay in the same position? So they've been incredibly fortunate in a way. So you look at it as there's a lot of fortune about it, but then you also have that nagging frustration of, oh, if only we'd have got some wins under the belt. I mean, wouldn't be worrying about these last 6 weeks of the season in terms of playoffs or anything like that, and we'd still be talking about possibility of catching Burnley. So it's a very strange feeling, but I suppose overriding it's got to be relief, really, just that you can have a run of form like Reading have had at home and still be in with a shout. And you've got to look at that as a good thing.
I mean, it's very reminiscent. I can't remember if you remember that far back, but to Steve Coppell's last season in charge, just after they got relegated, and they were, you know, flying towards automatic promotion. Then after Christmas, they couldn't buy a win at home for love nor money. And I think they went something silly in the end of between the January, and I think it took until Brendan Rodgers won a game in like November to break the streak. And it's just got that nagging feeling now that it's just breaking down. And we spoke last week, didn't we, about it's got to be something psychological in their heads, because there's no real reason that they're making all of these teams that, let's face it, are on paper average championship teams look like Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah, no, it's totally psychological. When you go to a home game now, on a Saturday morning before you go, what you're thinking? You're thinking, oh God, we're at home. And players have to think that same thing. I mean, I think it as well. I'm going away, like Charlton tomorrow, I'll get up in the morning and think, going away from home, this is good. There's going to be 3 points there. It's going to be exciting. They're going to attack. They're going to score goals. But then you wake up in the morning of a trip to the Modesky now, and just because of the running on, it's like, oh God, this is going to be tough. Can they sneak a win? You know, can we get a little bit of luck and just get over the line? And as much as they say that players don't think like that, they do. They're human beings. They must think like that. Fans think like it. Press think like it. Reporters think like it. And players must think like it as well, no matter what they say. And so it's just purely psychological. There's no other reason for it.
Yeah, they're going to need a bit of luck. They're going to need a ball to go in off someone's behind, or just a complete fluke to get this win. It will take something. But hopefully, I mean, there's a slightly higher calibre of side coming to the Modesky over the next few weeks. Obviously, you've got Leicester, you've got Burnley on the last day of the season. And you hope that these teams might just lessen the pressure on the Reading players, and they can express themselves and play a bit more of an open game.
Yeah, I think so, because you look at those sides and you wouldn't expect them to pack the defence and, you know, sit behind. They'll go for it, especially, you know, a team like Leicester will do it. And obviously you've got Burnley as well towards the last day of the season. And so those sort of sides, they're not going to sit back and pack the defence. So that might work out. But to be fair, everyone talks about this, you know, sitting back and teams. Huddersfield didn't do that.
Absolutely not.
Huddersfield came out and attacked. There was plenty of space already in there to get at them, and they just didn't do it and didn't really look like doing it. So I don't think, I mean, everyone talks about that team sitting back and packing defence for Reading struggling, but that wasn't the case against Huddersfield, certainly wasn't.
Absolutely not. Well, let's move on. And speaking of open games and end-to-end action, at the Modesky Stadium on Tuesday night, it was Reading's first ever appearance in an FA Youth Cup semi-final. First leg took place against Fulham. And for 45 minutes at least, Charles, it looked like it was going to be a dream night for Reading. They were 2-0 up against 10 men, but it didn't quite pan out the way they thought. And in the end, it ended 2-2 heading to that second leg at Craven Cottage. What did you make of that night?
I thought it was a fantastic night. I mean, you came out of it really frustrated, and as I'm sure the players did, as the management did, no matter how much they tried to paint a different picture, that the game wasn't put to bed and they weren't already firmly in the final, because they had the opportunity. For not just for 45 minutes, but for an hour, really. They sparkled. They were fantastic to watch. It was an absolute pleasure to sit there watching, given what we've been served up at the Matterstad recently. To go there and see a team play like that, it was brilliant. And you're talking about a Fulham side here as well, top of the table, and you know, known as pretty much the strongest team in the country at this level. They've beaten Reading twice in the league already this season, but Reading just tore into them, absolutely tore into them. Some wonderful football, and deservedly got themselves 2-0 up. Obviously, Fulham down at 10 men as well. You're sitting there at half-time thinking, this is it, game over, go on, win this comfortably. There was just a little turning point in the start of that second half. Reading scored a goal that was disallowed. I think it was, Sammy Frijohnson had a shot from outside the box that went in. And they're already celebrating. The linesman had his flag up. I think it was Harry Caldwell would run in front of the goalkeeper. Now, you've seen it a few times this season.
At Newcastle, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Newcastle one, exactly. And it was flagged for offside. And so many times you've seen it this season, and not, you know, the linesman keeps his flag down and the goal's given. But on this occasion, the lino stuck his flag up. Goal was disallowed. And then within a few minutes, Fulham had gone up the other end, pulled one back, and then it all got a little bit nervy, and you could see Fulham were on top. Fulham had this player, Patrick Roberts, I think sort of in the middle of the park, where he was floating around everywhere, actually, and he was superb, really, really good, and he got the equaliser in the end. And in the end, I suppose Reading were quite fortunate. We're not fortunate, but quite happy to get off there with a 2-2, because if anyone was going to probably win it towards the end, it may well have been Fulham. So, but all to play for. I completely fancy Reading to go to Craven Cottage on Monday night and get a result.
Well, it'd be fantastic if they do. So the game's going to be live on ITV4, so give everybody a chance to see it.
Were you there? Sorry, did you watch that? Have you seen any highlights or anything?
No, I've seen the highlights. I've been working early mornings. I have to get up at 1:30 in the morning. So football.
Have you seen Aaron Cole's pass?
I've
been raving about it all week. I honestly thought it was absolutely fantastic. I mean,
he's one of the players that I'm most excited to see come through to the team, especially given Reading's, I wouldn't say woes in the centre of midfield over recent years, but ever since Steve Sidwell left the club, they've been looking for that driving force, and they've had a few players that have hinted at it, but someone like that really does excite you, and it's a really good sign for the future.
But what a pass. I mean, Iniesta did do that on Tuesday night for Neymar's equaliser against Atletico. And honestly, Cole's pass was better than that. And if Cole had done that on a Tuesday night in the Champions League, it would have been raved about across Europe. For the rest of the week, it was that good a pass. It was fantastic. Highlight of the night for me by a mile. I was watching that. It was brilliant.
So fingers crossed they can go there and get the job done. So they've won at other big grounds this season. So fingers crossed they can make that two-legged final. But moving back onto first team issues, and again, it's time for that weekly update on the takeover. And actually, there's been quite a bit reported from yourself in Get Reading over the past week. What is the latest? As the last we heard, it was the Galatasaray sort of led consortium, as it were, that were front runners, but there seems to be a new group emerging.
Yes, we have the Italians entering the frame now.
It's World Cup of Reading ownership.
Adding their names. We're saying, can you imagine them opening a food court in a Medeski of all the interested parties of Reading? It'd be brilliant. You know, pretty much every sort of food there. Italian led by Bacchetti, I believe his name is, a businessman. He was over last week, him and his crew, his consortium, featuring a couple of names from Italian football. And they spent a week at Reading last week, were given a guided tour around Hogwood, snuck in on Saturday and sat not in the director's box. I think they're getting fed up with us getting photos of it from the director's box every game. So they're giving them seats elsewhere in the stadium. But yeah, they took the game in. And discussions carried on this week. I mean, I'm told that, you know, nothing's imminent with them. They're just another of a long list of interested parties. It seems very much a revolving door policy at Reading at the moment. It's like the house is for sale, isn't it? And people are coming in at will and having a look around and getting treated to the VIP day out and then go home. So I'm told there's nothing more to it than that they're just one of several interested parties, and it's just another name added to the list. But yeah, so I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I think it just does seem to be that, like I said, a bit of a revolving door at the moment. But at least we have a name with this one. Bichetti, it's seems to emerge, so I think that's made it a little bit more interesting.
And Reading's director of football, Nicky Hammond, given his backing to Sir John Medeski and Nigel Howe in the search. I mean, you spoke to him earlier this week. Did he reveal anything more?
Not overly, to be honest. He obviously said it's an open secret that the club's for sale. Just to be fair to Nick, I mean, he's kind of the football side of the board, isn't he? And he's not really with, in terms of sort of selling it. He's not there with Nigel and Sir John all the time, but he's obviously party to all the discussions, given that it's revolving around a football club and he is a football part of the board. And it was a really interesting chat with Nick, actually. I've got a lot more to come from that interview. That was we were down Hogwood yesterday. Didn't know we were going to be speaking to him, but Nick wanted to speak. So had a good sort of 20-minute conversation. And it was very interesting. I mean, I came out of it very, very impressed, I have to say. He was very good talking, Nick. And he was really sort of gave an impassioned plea. I think he realises and the club realises that there's just growing frustration at the moment. But with 7 games to go, obviously, and the Premier League still very much on the agenda, I think he's desperate to get the point across that, look, let's hold off until the summer here with the frustration and really focus on supporting the team and trying to get him over the line.
You feel a little bit sorry for him and the head of recruiting, Steve Head. I imagine they've had a fairly quiet 9 months.
Yeah, I know. And Nick gets an awful lot of grief on social media and everything. And I field a lot of questions about him, but I feel generally sorry. They can't have been harder or worse job than what Nick Hammond has had to go through this season. I'm sure a lot of Royals fans aren't going to have any sympathy for him, but I do, I have to say. I mean, how can you conduct contract negotiations? How can you try and talk to other clubs about possible signings when you're basically, when they say, okay, so how much are you offering? And he says, well, nothing at the moment, or I don't know. And that's a problem. So he's had a real, real tough time. And he admits that himself. I mean, there'll be a lot more over the next few papers from him talking about that. You know, he said he hates, it's been my most frustrating 12 months in football. And he said it's certainly right up there, because the one thing he hates is being vague. And that's what he's had to be for the last 12 months when he's sitting down with a player or anything like that. It's very vague and he wants to be definite. So he's had a tough time. I think he understands that. And he understands the frustrations of the fans as well. So fair pay to him for fronting up, because he didn't need to. He voluntarily wanted to speak and get his point across. So like I said, sort of look out for a lot more from Nick over the next couple of papers.
Forward to reading that. As I said, getreading.co.uk for that, and pick up the paper. Moving on back to the first team issues, lots of injury news coming out of the club this week, and for once it's actually a lot of positive news.
I know, can you believe it? It's just a shame it's right at the end of the season, isn't it? obviously we've got Sean and Danny have had another game under the belt, or a game under the belt, so they're going to be a lot stronger for that tomorrow. Danny Guffrey's back from suspension. And Wayne Bridge is back and will be travelling to the team tomorrow at the Valley, but he's travelling with a side. I think, basically, he's going to be very much managed through these last 6 or 7 games of the season. I mean, I do wonder how much longer Wayne Bridge's career has got, kind of judging by the fact that he's come back from this, but it still seems like he's going to have to be managed over these 7 games. So I think Nigel was like, he's certainly not ready to be playing 90 minutes. So I think he could be sort of almost used as an impact sub, which sounds bizarre for a left back. But I think over this stage of the season, where you need some experience and things like that, if someone needs to come in and shore things up, then, you know, Wayne Bridge could be the man over these next sort of 6 weeks.
I mean, he could come on and play left back, and then in the closing half an hour, so he could push Jordan Abita further forward.
Yeah.
From a left back slot that he sort of made his own. So it does give us an extra option, and the other one obviously being Mikel Leisurewood, who played 45 minutes for the youth side this week as well. And that's another great sign, because Reading have looked short in midfield.
They have done. It'd be great if Mikel can, you know, somehow contribute something to this season, because he's such an important part of the squad, such a popular part of the squad. And Nigel Adkins absolutely loves him, and what he would have given to be able to use someone of his experience and his know-how over this season. And he's desperate for him to be involved. So it's great to see him get 45 minutes yesterday. And hopefully, if he can get maybe one more under-21 game under his belt, and we could see him possibly for the last month. And who knows, he could get another magical Leisurewood moment at the end of a season, like we did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he knows how to get a side promoted. Well,
he does.
It sounds like it's going to be too soon. These next two games coming up for Reading are two very important away games. As I mentioned, they go to Charlton tomorrow against a team that are still in the middle of a relegation dogfight. They picked up a couple of good results. They beat Leeds earlier this week. But Reading are not going to go there and get an easy game. And obviously, with the law of the X in full effect, Simon Church is, I'm sure he's due one.
Yeah, well, to be fair, Simon hasn't played for a few weeks now. He's got a hamstring injury, but having talked to my sort of opposition reporter over on the South London Press yesterday, he's very, very close, and he expects him to actually play on tomorrow. So given what's happened so far this season, I think we all know what that could mean. And also Ben Hamer as well. He had a fantastic game midweek and saved a last-minute Ross McCormack penalty to preserve the 1-0 win up at Elland Road. So it could be a curse at either end tomorrow. He could have a striker banging a goal in and a keeper keeping them out. So we'll have to watch out for that.
How do you expect Nigel Adkins to change the team? Do you expect the likes of Danny Guthrie, who are back from suspension, to come straight back in?
I think Danny will certainly come back in. I don't think there'll be any sort of argument about that. He'll slot straight back in alongside Danny Williams in central midfield. I think it'll be interesting to see what he does with a forward line. I mean, he played Hull Robson Carney again last week, and again, he was hugely disappointing. And I'm not sure how we'll start again. It's quite bizarre just playing Pogrebniak and Robson Carney, to be fair, as well together. I'm not sure that really works. So I think we might see something different. Whether he might bring Drenta back in and play Drenta in the hole again and play, you know, the four across the midfield, or will he bring Alfie? And I mean, Alfie's, it's been a long time since Alfie's had a start, so maybe Alfie will come back in. I think that's going to be the interesting point, is how he approaches that front part of the pitch.
How do you see the game going, and what's your score prediction?
I think my score prediction is 3-1 as well. I went for in the paper. I spoke to the Charlton programme today, and they put a piece on their website with me, and they got it wrong. They put my prediction as 2-1, so I'm very much in the 3-1 camp. I think we'll see some goals. I think Gareth McCleary will have a hell of a game. The pitch at the Valley is awful, though. The drainage system there is completely broken down throughout the season, and they've had postponements because of it, and it's very, very bare. Nigel said yesterday that although it looks bare, the ball does still run fairly true, but I'm not sure that's the case. My brother's a Charlton fan, and he says it's absolutely awful. So,
well, given the amount of passing football Ren have been playing in recent weeks, I think that might play into our hands.
Maybe so, you never know.
suit the moderate style anyway. So that's for Charlton, and then obviously it's a bit early to speculate on the team for Bournemouth, but you imagine with two games in, changes. But Bournemouth are a team that are absolutely flying, and I noticed even Ian Hart managed to get himself on the score sheet up at Birmingham. So they're a team banging form. They're making this late playoff charge under Eddie Howe, and you know they play QPR at the weekend and then Reading, and if they win those two games, they'll very much consider themselves right in the playoff frame.
They will. I mean, everyone talks about it, don't they? There's always one team that sneaks up off the radar at the end of the season and gets that momentum, and Bournemouth are very much that side at the moment. Flying, I think 6 wins from 8. One of the only defeats, amazingly enough, was actually at Charlton a few weeks back. So, yeah, I mean, flying. If they do beat QPR, then they're going to be tearing at Reading on Tuesday night. I think it'll be a very uncomfortable night at the Gold Sands. See lots of Reading fans going, making the trip down there. Should be a cracking atmosphere, and with so much resting on the game as well, I'm hoping for a really exciting match. So, all to play for, and very difficult one. I think if Reading can win at Valley and get a point at Bournemouth, I think they'll probably consider that a fairly decent week.
Are you going for a draw then?
I will go for a draw at Bournemouth, yeah. I think I'll stick with In fact, I'll go for some goals. I'll say a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, I think on the main edition of the show, I think I went for a 3-1 at Charlton, like yourself. And for Bournemouth, I just think they're going to be really up for it. And I think Reading might slip to a defeat, a 2-1 defeat. But as I said, given the way our predictions have gone, I don't know if you heard the main edition of the show the other week where we plotted out all of the playoff challenges and their run-ins, and I think between the three of us, I think we've got about 2 right results in 10. So all go right at this stage of the season. But it's the unpredictable nature of the Championship.
Indeed, talking about Bournemouth, I was looking back at our pre-season supplement in the Post today, and my predictions of where teams will finish, and I had Reading as champions. Not quite worked out, and I had Bournemouth relegated. So I don't think I'm really one to be doing any predictions.
Well, there's a reason we're not cleaning up at the bookies, I suppose.
No, indeed. Well, Grand National tomorrow, you never know. You could switch to racing, we might have better luck.
I think there's one horse that's in blue and white hoops. I think he's called Walk On. So, but he's a 50-1 shot.
Is he? I drew out a red and white guy yesterday in a sweepstake. I can't remember his name, but I was quite happy with the colours. So I'll stick with that.
Yeah, well, there we go. Right, well, that just about wraps this up for this week. Anything I said other than Nicky Hammond, anything else coming up in the next couple of papers?
No, well, obviously we've got all the reaction to this weekend's game and the reaction to the Youth Cup semi-final second leg on Monday, and then plenty with Nick Hammond, so stay tuned to that. And we're starting to do a fun Reading FC quiz each day on the website as well, which is going down really well so far. So test your Royals knowledge every lunchtime during the week.
Yeah, head over to getreading.co.uk for that. I said you can pick up the paper twice a week. I said there's plenty more fan analysis and opinion over on thetirelessend.com, whereas you can also hear me and Johnny ramble on for just over an hour in the main edition of the show. I said all the details are up on the website. But that about wraps it up for this week. So as I said, we'll be back with you next Friday. Thanks very much for listening. Ta-da.
The Tirelhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetirelhurstend.com.